and welcome to the Rolling More the Leicester Tigers Fans Podcast. With me, Mike, and over there is Elliot, as we bask in the glory of yet another example of "You shall not pass" from our boys at the, was it the, which is the community stadium again? The Brentford Community Stadium. Thank you very much. Elliot, you didn't get to go this time, but cracking result again. We've had to go to the well twice in successive weeks.
I know, it's good to have this winning feeling back. Finally, all season, we've been trying to search for some momentum and consistency. And finally, I think we've got some. So it's great. I had two wins in a row. I'm loving it.
Very nice. How did you spend your weekend celebrating? It was a good weekend of sport, apart from City, but they were playing Arsenal, so I've kind of written that off anyway.
Yeah, they sort of let us down, effectively. But yeah, Saturday ended up being quite a lot of rugby being watched. Obviously, Super Rugby with being back, so that sort of helps with breakfast, then move into a nice afternoon.
What's your wife doing during all of this?
Well, she was in London. My wife plays netball in Oakham. So her and her team went down to London for the day to watch a show. So effectively, I was left home alone for the day. And so I filled it by the only way I know how, which is watching lots of rugby, which was really good. So, yeah, breakfast with Super Rugby, early afternoon with Italy-Ireland, into a late afternoon, England-Wales, finished off by a nice dessert of Irish Leicester.
How many metres do you think you moved during that day?
I think you work, it's about 5 metres between the living room to the fridge and kettle. So however many trips I did to the fridge and get to the fridge and back, so probably about 100 metres.
Nice. I assume you get chuck in a couple of toilet breaks in there as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I think 100 metres all told. I think if I was to look at my health stats on the iPhone, I'd probably show as being clinically dead, which is probably not good. I think the last time it was that low was when I had such an almighty hangover, I refused to get out of bed. And I don't think I recorded a single step, which was a bad
victory as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it was a bad day. That was a memorable day and a bad one. But then, so that was my Saturday. And Sunday I met up with some friends. So it was quite nice. How was yours, mate?
Very, very quiet. Lots of going out with the family on nice walks. Enjoyed what I could on Saturday as well, as much as you can with the kids running around. The little one right now, in case I seem a little bit all over the place, my little one's a bit poorly. And so I've had two consecutive nights of less than 4 hours sleep. So I'm a little bit higgledy-piggledy today. But I made up for it because to keep my energy up, I'm doing a wee bit of gardening, but I'm getting some nervous look from the neighbours because I'm basically digging what looks to be a human-sized trench, using a pickaxe to try and build a new flower bed. Just to keep my neighbours on their toes and on their best behaviour, I think.
I like it. It's that sort of air of sinister that I think you're projecting, which I think is quite nice. Not saying that you will do it, but no. you've got the means now.
Yeah. Just that kind of like ever-present cloud of threat that looms over them, I think should mean that they keep the noise down after, 9 p.m., which is all I want.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our ways and means. You're just
slightly more sinister with it. That's fine.
Hey, look, if it works, it works.
Exactly. Anyway, we have got a really exciting little podcast today because we are super lucky to be joined by Matt Tamua, who dropped by earlier. Fortunately, Elliot was ever the professional. He wasn't able to make it. So it was just me. I properly threw you under the bus as well in the reason why you couldn't make it in front of Matt Tamua. So sorry, mate. I've done you over there.
I mean, it's not only he's my favourite player from that era, Magic Man. That's what I used to call him, Magic Man Matt Tamua, and you've officially fucked me over.
That's also why I wouldn't let you speak to him, because I thought you were going to call him Magic Man Matt Tamua to his face. It's like letting me speak to Guy Porter. But then we're obviously also going to talk about the incredible victory away at London Irish and look ahead to a crucial home game against Bath. Now, before we crack on, I've got to remind you all, firstly, say thank you to everyone who since last week has sponsored me to do my Tough Mudder, which is the 6th of May, just before our last home game against Harlequins. We're going to do that first thing in the morning, then charge up and try and watch the Quins game, hopefully stand on the terrace with you, my good friend Elliot, and have a couple of beers. Hopefully I'll have time to get changed and I won't be still sweaty and muddy and electrocuted and everything I'll be doing. But thank you to everyone who's sponsored so far. It's incredibly generous of you. I'm got £400 of my £500 target. If you want to sponsor me, please do, and to help me take over that target and maybe even set a new higher target, that would be amazing. You can find the link to the Just Giving page on our Twitter page. It's a pinned tweet right at the top, so you just go onto our profile. As always, if you want to leave us a review, please do so. We particularly like it on Apple because that way it kind of helps us get up the charts. And also, if you want to get in touch, our Twitter handle is @RollingMallPod and the email address is therollingmall@outlook.com. Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting, and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGMALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGMALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase. Okay, welcome to the beep, 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 beep news section. And I think for the first time in a few weeks, it's going to be a reasonably quiet one because we don't have any potential head coaches to wonder about. Obviously, last week's news that Dan McKellar was joining. Still very excited about that. Don't have any news on any assistant coaches yet. There's been no sort of particularly sticky rumours that have flown about. I suppose the only thing we want to talk about potentially, Elliot, is Mike Blair, who's going to be stepping down from Edinburgh.
Yeah, it's a. We could be putting two and two together and getting five. It's very, very, very possible. But no, it's an intriguing announcement. It's very rare to have a head coach step down because they want to focus on one area and he wants to focus on being a world-class attack coach, which is really exciting. And I think he'd be a perfect sort of fit for us, really, if Dan McKellar. I'm not sure how or where he's looking at, but. I think Mike Blair would be a good fit for us. He's done pretty well with where he's been at Edinburgh. He's got to play in some good rugby. He's well regarded at Fair, has been one of the best young coaches coming through in Scotland. So considering, you know, how Dan McKellar, we should point out that the interview that we're referring to is the one put up last week from linked to on our account. So if you haven't had a chance to look at it, it is very worthwhile watching for an hour. It is a fantastic insight into how Dan McKellar thinks and how he sees rugby, really, and you should have a look at it. And it's interesting how Dan McKellar looks at sort of coaches in terms of bringing them in terms they've got to be ambitious, they've got to work hard, and they want to, they've got to be good coaches as well. You know, Mike Blair, from my angle, ticks all a lot of those boxes. So it wouldn't be an abnormal thing if he joined us.
Particularly appealing, actually, isn't it? As you say, when he's stepping away from a head coach role because he wants to become one of the best attack coaches in the world. I mean, what an amazing show of ambition. Sounds weird saying it's ambitious to step away from being a head coach to being effectively ever an assistant coach. But if you want to be the best in the world at that position, you know, I think that's quite impressive. And I do wonder, that is something that we do need on top of what we've got at the moment. Dan McKellar, his background is in defence and in forwards coaching in particular. So you'd think that someone like Mike Blair might well be on the radar. So I suppose watch this space. Got no concrete evidence on that, but as you say, we're just putting two and two together. Now, shall we move on to a wee bit of Tiger Watch? And we'll have a look at how the boys did. Luckily, they're all conveniently grouped together in one game. Wales against England. And we managed to have one of our listeners got in touch, Daniel Hames, who says he's loved the pod ever since we started. He looks forward to it each week.
Hi, chaps. Just a note to say how great the Tigers contingent were for England this evening. All of them, I think, contributed brilliantly. Freddie Stewart was very deservedly man of the match. And I think also JVP had a great game. And I'm pretty baffled by the people all over social media saying that he was no good. I think he managed things really well.
Thank you very much, mate. Yes. Tigers contingent. I thought they all played fantastically well. Even Tommy Raphael, when he came off for Wales, was one of their better players by a long stretch. They obviously didn't have a particularly good day at the office. This England performance has got quite a lot of hate. I actually thought it was, they left a lot of points out there, but I thought it was, you know, an okay performance. I thought quite positive, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. It is quite baffling. I think, well, I tweeted it on Sunday. I said, for me, it is quite evident that Steve is following the Leicester Tigers playbook, which he had, to the letter. You know, it's not like he's taking little bits of it and adding to it. He's taken the exact game plan which he had at Leicester and is reproducing it with England. And, you know, he hasn't took it all the way back to the very, very beginning like he did with us, but he doesn't need to. But he has stripped it back to a basic level where he thinks it needs to be. And then he's layering on top with it. And, you know, I looked at Saturday's game against Wales, and to me, it just reminded me of so many of Tigers' performances over the last two or three years under Steve. You know, I've watched however many games Steve was in charge, 70, 80 games he had with us. Now, neither of us can claim to know Steve's mind. You know, Steve's very much a unique individual in terms of that, and he always thinks two or three steps ahead, and he's always like playing 4D chess with this sort of thing, as we well know from his time with us. But I think after 70 games in charge of us, I have a fairly good idea of what Steve wants to achieve and what Steve's sides will start to look like. And to me, that's exactly what I got from England. It was pretty clinical. It was ruthless. I always think Steve is ruthless efficiency. And to me, Saturday for England was that. It was pretty clinical, defended well.
I wouldn't agree. Certainly in defence, I thought they were very good in defence. I thought they left a lot of points out there. There was a couple of times particularly, I think they attacked really well in the first 20 of the last 10. But they got turned over sort of, I'd say, into the 22 a little bit. They didn't, in the first half, for example, they really didn't make that possession and territory count. So I thought that they were, that is what they want to aspire to, but I felt they didn't quite achieve it. But I thought that the attacking intent was pretty good in the first 20 anyway.
Yeah, I just find it funny that people have had 2.5 years of watching Steve with Leicester and still can't understand A, what he's trying to do, and B, can't cope with it. Do you mean it's like, it's not as if Steve's going to come in and go,
Jouer.
I know. Do you mean like the bloke literally spends half his time watching lineouts? You know, he's not going to be going, yeah, we're going to fucking rip that all off. You know, he's won trophies with Leicester playing a certain brand of rugby. Quite clearly, he believes in it. I don't understand what people thought was going to happen. It makes me very, I just find it very funny that people can't understand what's going on and or can't cope with it. And I think it's more the latter.
Well, there's plenty of different ways to play rugby, and all of them can be successful. So a lot of the stuff you hear about, the game's moved on, the game's done. There's, you know, perhaps some teams have developed different ways that are currently successful. Other teams will be able to be successful in other ways. And when you hear people saying, oh, you know, look, the game for kicking and defence, but then with a clinical attack, that's no longer a successful blueprint. You know, it hasn't been for years. I heard someone say, I was like, yeah, you are right. Apart from Leicester last year, apart from South Africa winning the World Cup, apart from literally 5 years of Saracens dominance, which, regardless of your thoughts on the salary cap, was played with a very pragmatic and similar type of play to what Borthwick is looking to implement now. And of course, he was part of the, you know, a team that developed that. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's a bit of a load of nonsense, really, some of the criticism of it. We've already scored more tries than we did in the Six Nations last year, and we're only 3 games in. We've already made more line breaks than the whole of the Six Nations last year, and we're only 3 games in. That was our record win in Wales since 2003, and people are still moaning. I mean, like, he's had 3 games. We should have beaten Scotland. They were fantastic in the last quarter, but we were ahead and comfortable at the time, and we didn't see it out. And, you know, I'd say it's a pretty solid start, and I do think he might have something up on his sleeve. I think he wants one statement win from the last 2 games. But anyway, just on the Tigers boys very quickly, Chesham, bit quieter, but still really superb. Thought Coley coming off the bench, really a bit more mobile this time. He looked really good and really solid in the scrums. Also, obviously, had Freddie at fullback, was just magnificent, flawless under the high ball because they kept kicking to him. It was quite nice to see. Felt like a real return to form for him, and he got his arse out as well. So everyone's a winner. And JVP, I agree with what Dan said. Bizarre that people are knocking him. Mitchell comes on with 8 minutes. Everyone's knackered. Does his job really well. He's a great player, Mitchell. Plays at tempo, helps set up a try. But people who said JVP wasn't doing that are just blind or being deliberately ignorant. You just watch the first 20 minutes of that game, and JVP's speed of ball was fine, and then we slowly got dragged into a dogfight. So, yeah, I thought he was excellent.
I think it's the jackdaw mentality of shiny things. And actually with JVP, he's actually... The reason why... I mean, we can go into a tangent here, and I'll try not to. But, you know, the reason why Fordy's coming, for example, is that Steve likes people to be really disciplined in what he wants them to do. And if you look at what Jack was doing for the 70 minutes he was on, I thought his kicking was excellent in terms of length of kick and where he was putting it, tinning the Welsh back three players onto the touchline and allowing our chasers to come up and force, you know, to stop them on the line. You know, we went forward 20, 30 yards with really intelligent kicks. And it's because our defence has now improved under Kev, with England, it allowed us to move up the field and get the territory, get the dominance and control of the game that we wanted to. And the whole point of Steve's game plan is to have a solid nine for 50, 60 minutes doing it. And I think it'll be between Jack and Ben Youngs who will take that starting role in the World Cup.
Mm.
And I think this is why Lenny's come back to us, so he can see Jack doing it for England. And I think he wants Mitchell coming off the bench for the last 20, 30 minutes. And Mitchell's one of the best in the Prem against tired legs. So yeah. Why would you, you know, horses for courses, yes, it may be. But this is exactly what you've got. It's aces in their places. You've got a lad coming off the bench who can rip it up against the, you know, tiring legs. You know, if you're opposition, what do you want to happen? Probably not having Alex Mitchell running at you when you're shagged.
No, so, but it's the same all the time. It's what bores me. We've had this for years with Ben Youngs and Danny Kerr. Ben Youngs plays really solidly for 60, 70 minutes. Danny Kerr comes on, like, really sparky, really lively. It was just, oh, start Danny Kerr. He starts it, and they said, why isn't he sniping? Why isn't he ripping people apart all the time? Well, because he's playing against fresh legs from the start. And then you have Ben Youngs come on, and he does impress. And everyone says, oh, he's looking more lively now. Yeah, that's how it works. At scrum half, I think, is a position to easiest influence the game off the bench and to easiest up the tempo and to be most noticeable doing it. And what you want is a full 80-minute performance from your two scrum halves. And that's exactly what you got from two guys who did the role really well. But it's just people... I'm just going to be really pig-headed and call everyone else stupid. I mean, when it comes to that, I think it's really short memories and a bit of ignorance with it. But I thought JVP massively dominated the territory battle. Thought he was magnificent. I would like to see him snipe a little bit more. I would say that because I think it's a bit like with Lenny. I think it's a real weapon of his. Anyway, let's focus back on Leicester. Let's go and have a look at the Leicester Tigers women's side. Scraping home at Welford Road with a 57-0 win against Kenilworth Women. The train ain't stopping for no one.
No, it's just... It's always hard each week to keep thinking of ways of describing what they're doing because it's just so brilliant. No, it's fantastic. 57-0. And, you know, where'd you go with it? I mean, I think it was 9 tries. That's amazing. 57 points scored. That's amazing. Clean sheets in defence. Look, it is superb.
That's the highlight. That's the highlight, the nil. Because that helps us get closer to the goal of keeping it under 100 conceded for the season, which would be absolutely insane. Bit of disappointment. Molly Draycott didn't score a hat-trick. She only scored one.
But she scored a load of points off the kicking tee, so...
Yeah, I know. I was going to say not good enough, but okay, she's picked it up there. Yeah. Fair enough, Drake's well played. So 57-0, and...
Katie Childs, friend of the show, got 2 tries.
Did she? Why wasn't she kicking?
I don't know. So maybe just the... might have been injured, or just to have a shift around to see how Molly got on. Georgia Westwood with an assist. Katie Childs with 2 tries, so... Friends of the pod doing well for us. So, but no, it's good. It's good. It's a shame they don't have a cup competition. I understand why they don't.
Yeah.
But it would be nice just to get a cup competition to pin ourselves against, you know, a Premier 15s team, just to see where we are now and just to get a feel for the level they're performing at. Because that to me is, you know, obviously with that's the thing what we're building towards now. And it's always the big question of how will we fare? It'd be nice to have a little bit of a marker now just to go, do we need to have a couple more signings or are we pretty well set where we are?
No, 57-0 every day of the week next season as well.
Yeah, well, if we sign Emily Scarrett, it will be happening.
as I mentioned earlier, super lucky to be joined by one of my favourite players whilst he was at the club anyway, Matt Tomoa. Elliot's not here because he's too professional to take time off his working day to go and speak to Matt. Matt, I value your company. It's great to see you, mate, all the way from Japan. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. And yeah, cheers, Elliot. He's made me feel welcome by not even bothering to turn up. But no, it's
good. Yeah, that would generally break his heart. He was so gutted that he couldn't chat to you. Mate, well, firstly, let's talk about you, because you're in Japan at the moment. Obviously, you moved back and played for the Rebels when you left Tigers, went to Australia. But you're now in Japan for one of the best-named teams in the competition. Am I right? Is it the Mitsubishi Dynabores?
Yeah, so one thing I've worked out, yeah, the names are weird, eh? So, like, they're all, for anyone who doesn't know, they're all companies. So you got Panasonic, you got Suntory, you got Toshiba and all that. So we're Mitsubishi, but then they obviously, to add a bit of excitement to it, they add a mascot or whatever. So we're Dynabores, which means dynamic boar, which I don't, you know, there you go. My favourite one is the... Kurita Water Gush.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, exactly.
This isn't a family show, so you can talk about the gush as
well. Yeah, exactly. So Kurita Water Gush, they're a team we've played twice, and I thought it was a piss take, and it's all emblazoned on them and everything. So there's some interesting names, that's for sure.
I mean, the boar isn't the first animal I go to. It has been described about how I play centre as generally a bit like a boar. Will Greenwood likened me to a warthog. His comment was, "You're either a warthog or a gazelle." And he looked at me and he said, "You don't look like a gazelle," which is why my name was Pumba for my local rugby club. So bizarre names and everything. And when we spoke to Freddie Burns, and he said it's kind of a weird setup because you have some like real sort of elite pros now playing in that league. So the standard in some areas is pretty good, but at the same time, you've still got a few guys who aren't professional. So they like rock up to training on like, you know, Tuesday, Thursday night, I assume, and things like that. And so you've got really top level playing with perhaps guys who, you know, might be talented, but aren't quite there. Is that right? And what's that like to play amongst?
Yeah, it is right. It's less so now. So basically, it used to be most teams, you know, were made up of company workers. So they'll work for Toshiba, Mitsubishi or whatever, do the 9-to-5 and then you train afterwards. So we have about maybe half a dozen company workers. Maybe only a couple are in the like kind of starting team. But yeah, it is different. Sometimes the guys will come in a suit and tie and you know, it's a bit weird or, you know, back in the day, I'm pretty sure it was quite like the difference between the foreigners and the company workers was huge because, you know, some guys are just waiting around all day until training. Other guys are working, as I said, 9-to-5 jobs. So, yeah, really, really interesting rugby culture. There's so many, little things that are very different, but, yeah, pretty cool at the same time as well. Like they really care about their companies, which is weird for us, say, as Westerners, because the company's kind of like a, you know, you don't form an attachment to a company, but they do see it like their club. Really interesting.
That is bizarre because when I first heard that, you get the guys working for the company, I wondered if it was like if I play at a corporate sevens tournament and all of a sudden I think there was one company that had like Fraser Waters and Josh Lucy in their backline. Mm. They'd rope them in to do the photocopying like for a week or something like that, just so that they could bring them in as rugby. I didn't know if they had Matt Tomoa sort of like delivering the internal mail like once a week, just so they could say, yeah, that's who you work for Mitsubishi. Glad it's not the case. Yeah, I mean, how are you settling into Japan like overall as well? Because it is so, you just alluded to it there, it's so different, I bet, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really foreign. So like, so I've been here maybe half a dozen times beforehand, but just for rugby, quick tours and that, and you very much get a sanitized view of it because you go to the training field, you go back to your hotel, your nice hotel, you get your Western food and you go, oh, gee, how good's Japan? But then living here, doing a lot of, I love paperwork here, geez. You got to like, we had to register my car park. That took about 4 hours just to register where I'm parking my car, which is in the garage. There's just honestly, there's countless things of paperwork they do, and they got a very, very low unemployment rate here, and I can see why, because they're all filling through papers. But no, mate, honestly, I love it. It's beautiful. The people here are lovely. The most polite, loving people. After every game, we'll get a gift from a fan saying, "No, I just got married in December. You know, happy wedding," or got some dog
congratulations.
Treats. Yeah, thanks. Just got some dog treats from people. Got like they just you know
you're a dog.
Yeah,
because exactly. Because if you don't have a dog, that's an insult.
Well, for my new wife, no, yeah, they have like towels with your face on it and your whole like it's just it is very very
that
different.
That one's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, drawing your parts with your face is an experience.
Yeah, well, I always try to take Freddy's down, but no, it's different, man. Like it's really cool. Like I think you're often trying to find your feet and. Find what's similar to home, but I think once you accept that it's not home, it's never going to be home, you kind of start adjusting a little bit better. So it definitely has taken a little bit of time to get used to things, because you're just constantly walking around anxious that you've offended someone, because they are very rule abiding people, and so you just masks here are still worn 24/7. There's just all sorts of things that you're just worried you're offending people. So, yeah, once you get over that and realize you're just the rude foreigner, then it's all good.
That's okay, because I think I'm generally accidentally quite rude anyway. So, I do particularly well in Japan. So you obviously went there, as I said, via the Rebels, and you'd spent three seasons at Tigers after the 2015 World Cup as part of what, to be frank, looked like. Like, was it Rugby 08, the game where you could like do a fantasy backline? Frankly, it looked like we cheated, because we had Lenny, Ford, yourself, Manu when he was fit, and then Johnny May, Talusa, and then another, but he was always someone pretty hot. Like we had Nick Maloof for one season, I think, didn't we?
Adam
Thompson.
Turner Holmes, and
mad backline. How do you look back on your time at Tigers overall? Obviously, it didn't quite go, I suppose, according to plan. I think perhaps when he came over, we were looking at, look, we're going to get back at the top table. We're going to try and sort of compete in Europe again. And it ended up kind of going south. But overall, how do you look back at your time at Leicester? Was it something you enjoyed or something that kind of is a bit of an annoyance?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. Look, I did go there. I've always wanted to win a premiership. And so that's why I was super excited to go to team like Tigers. But yeah, it doesn't always work out that way, I guess, in terms of results. But I definitely learned a lot about one, the game, but then also I think that the club was very much trying to figure out, like trying to get caught between that, do we evolve or do we stick to what we're good at? And so it was really interesting. And that as a play, like I definitely look at it more fondly now as I'm kind of taken away from it. But when you're in the moment, you're just super competitive. You want to win, you want to do well. And it can get quite frustrating, as I know many fans would agree as well. But, the fact that the club has done well since then, I'm sure that they learned lessons. And I see myself as part of that journey. Like, I didn't get to lift the trophy, but of course I'm cheering when the boys are successful, and realizing it's cool to see the club, improve and learn from mistakes and all that. So, and obviously still have a lot of mates in there. But I still show people like videos of running out or walking out at Tigers, walking out Welford Road. And like, yeah, I'm super proud of that, to be honest. Yeah. I loved every minute of it, and especially the fans. Like it's really cool being in such a big rugby city, and such a great supporter base and an amazing stadium. Like, yeah, I'll be very proud of that when I'm done.
What was the process of you coming over from 2015? Because it, as usual, there are no secrets in rugby, like the top secret, I suppose meetings and all that. So somebody finds out and blabs. But what was that process of moving over like, and what attracted you to the club?
It's probably no secret, because I just had to go to Nando's and see if Colin was there, and then he'd realize he's meeting with one of the new players. But no, in all honesty, so they were just talking a little bit during the World Cup, and then it was actually it was the morning after we lost the final. So we lost the final on the Saturday, And, you know, you can imagine we had a decent party that night. And I actually got up the next morning and hired a car and drove out to Welford Road and watched Leicester play Wasps, it was at the time, which coincidentally I was talking to them as well. But then, funny enough, there were some, you know, rugby fans there, obviously, who asked for a photo. And then the rumors came out that I was going to Wasps. So I was like, oh, almost. But I'm at Leicester Stadium. So that's kind of how it happened. Aaron Major was a big part for that, I guess. You know, he looked up to him a lot when I was a kid and probably saw a few similarities in the way he played and the way I, you know, strive to play. And then thought it would be a kind of a nice fit. As I said, a few things went a different way. But, it was all pretty smooth process. I don't mind dragging things out, to be honest. So I'm kind of very like, all right, if I want to go here or whatever, let's do it. I don't like the drama or anything like that.
The time that you were here, it was frustrating to watch as a fan because it always looked like we were that close, not just to beating teams, but by like ripping them apart, if that makes sense. And I think you made a good point earlier that maybe the balance was wrong. We were trying to sort of say, right, we've always been a very tight forward-oriented team. Let's invest in the backs, and maybe sort of some areas of like our tradition got missed a bit, and the platform went for you guys to work off. When you were there, what was it like sort of being in that environment? Did you identify that stuff wasn't why things weren't quite going right at the time? And was it like, as a team, was it like quite a difficult place to be at points?
Yeah, it was. And look, I say I probably look at it now, you know, as I said, less emotional. I had a few years to think about it and digest it. But, yeah, you know, probably you can say we potentially, just straight away from what the club is known for and good at. And probably realise that you can't, like, you can't take it for granted. If you think of just money spent or investment, you know, clearly we went heavily on the back line, which is great if you're a back, but you know, the games are won by the forward pack, and you know, the backs determine how much, and it's very much that case at a club like Leicester. Whilst we tried to evolve, I think we were very much one foot in each camp. We would always, you know, simple thing, we would always do rolling balls from 15 metres in just because that's what Leicester's done. And when I was there, we hadn't scored one. We hadn't scored a try for, it was something like 8-10 weeks or something from a rolling ball. It was ridiculous. But that's what Leicester does, you know. So we kind of just struggled to kind of go both feet in each camp and go, we had one foot in each camp, and rather than kind of evolve our game completely, we were a bit half pregnant, and it probably showed in the way we played.
I think that's a really good point, because you say it was like we wanted to sort of like go, right, let's go coast to coast, be a bit more expansive, let's play the space, what's it Nick Evans is saying for England at the moment, space over structure, that sort of way. But then there would be times when, like you say, we'd slow it down, we'd tighten it up, and then you've got all this gold dust that wide. You've got Manu snorting like an angry bull, just wanting to take it, you know, take it off a peel from a line out, and it doesn't happen. So I can understand that. Your time, obviously, at Leicester was, you played a lot at 12 outside 40 when he was here, or when he was a teacher, but you also played 10. Big question for me is, what is your preferred out of the two? I think my favourite game watching you was it Harlequins at home. There was an outrageous dummy, and you went through to score. And I was on the terrace that one. That was quite funny. What was your preferred position and sort of why?
Yeah, my preferred position is 10. I always played 10 when I was a kid. But as some teams evolve, particularly in Australia, 10 and 12 are quite similar, and the way we were playing at Leicester at that point was the same. So I don't mind playing either at that, if that's the team structure. And I, in a weird way, I kind of didn't mind flipping between the two. I've got a pretty short attention span, so there's something about being reinvigorated, going, oh, you're 10 this week, oh, no, you're 12, and I'll be like, all right, brilliant, and I just get re-excited by things. So I think for quite a while I was really trying, oh, I've got an out down one, you know, good at. And then I think after a while I kind of realised, you know what, I don't mind actually either of them. Like they're both pretty good, and They're both far more similar than they are different. So yeah, but I always played tennis when I was a kid, so that's usually where I'd like to go to. And I don't mind it either way, to be fair.
Worryingly, my team also, I still play the same if I get forced into playing 10 at my club. So you get a crash ball fly half, which you don't get many of these days.
They used to call me the, when I was at Brumbies, Stephen Larkin used to call me Crowbar because you have to get a crowbar to get wrench the ball free off me as well at times. So, yeah.
Well, you first burst.
Sometimes it doesn't get better.
You first burst onto, I suppose, like wider attention in the Northern Hemisphere when the Lions were touring in 2013. And you've for some reason took a particular dislike to Billy 12 Trees in a provincial game. And everyone's like, who's this fly half who's going around burying people?
Yeah, I had a different role then. Literally had Jake White, who would say, Jake White used to send me clips of Butch James back in the day. And he said,
Butch James, the inspiration.
Yeah, genuinely. And like, because I like goal kicking as well. And his quote to me was, I was practicing my goal kicking, he says, Matt, Butch doesn't kick, why would you kick? Now, I didn't know how to argue that because that's quite a hard thing to argue with. Like,
you don't even know what you're arguing with.
No, I don't know. I said, well, good point, Jake. So I gave him my tee back and went and shoulder charged the post.
Well, obviously, we've talked about why things didn't work out as well as we wanted to at Leicester. But as you say, you look back at it now with a bit of positivity. What are some of your favourite memories or favourite games there? And like, what was the atmosphere like as a group of boys? Was it a good group to be part of?
Yeah, like, look, it's a mix, isn't it? Because as I said before, we care about the club, so there's no point was there people giving up. But at the same time, it was frustrating. You trying to boss some steam at some time as well. So, it is a very frustrating time. I love the rugby. I love the off field. Really close with Greg Bateman and Lenny, Manu, Tolusa. I just messaged Greg actually a couple of days ago. 1 year for Christmas, we had a game on New Year's Eve, and Lenny and I decided that we're going to go get our Christmas trees and throw them over Greg's garden, his fence. And so we're going to throw them in his backyard. And I forgot about this story, but Greg woke up the next day and I took him to where we were playing. So I went and picked him up and he goes, mate, you wouldn't believe it. I've got these Christmas trees. Like, someone's just throwing their Christmas trees over my fence. It's in my backyard. And I said, well, show me. So sends me a photo. He's got three trees. And I said, Greg, that's unbelievable. And he goes, why do you think that is? And I said, mate, I reckon the neighbours, that they don't like you because you've got a flash car and they're probably just trying to get back at you. Anyway, so he was filthy. So then we played the game that night, and then we messaged Manu and George and Johnny. And so we got another three, four trees. And at midnight, we threw all the trees over into his garden. And he woke up the next day and he was livid. He says, what's going on? And I said, mate, I think you need to let people know about this. So then he grabbed all six trees, put them out on the nature strip, and then wrote into the Facebook page, you know, the local
community Facebook groups, yeah.
Community Facebook pages, yeah. And he said, listen, whoever thinks it's funny to do this, blah, 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 you can't be doing that. And then he ended up copying a lot of stick from all the neighbors saying, you should be above this, Greg, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, Lenny and I are just losing our marbles. And we ended up, I was actually Lenny's nephew. One night told Greg that it was us. He snitched on us, and we were pretty filthy about that. But, yeah, 6-year-old snitch. But we had a lot of fun doing, you know, all sorts of things, and just a good bunch of blokes, mate. Good banter, good fun. A lot of good times there. Yeah.
Moving forward to like present time, obviously the exciting news if you're a Tigers fan is, who's Dan McKellar, former Brumbies and Australian assistant coach, is coming over to take over next season. You got apparently found your Twitter password after a couple of years, and you jumped on to say great appointment. So lots of people jumped on that as evidence. But do you want to share sort of, I suppose, the time you've spent with Dan? Because I think he was a Brumbies coach, not the head coach, before you came to Leicester, and then he was also. Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying that he just joined the Wallaby setup in 21 when you were last playing?
Yeah, well done. Good homework. I had them for maybe 3, 4, 5 years, something like that, at Brumbies. And he worked under Jake White alongside Larry Fisher and Stephen Larkham there. So we had a really good setup back then. Alan Walters was there as well. So he's kind of been in that group. And then, not surprisingly, he was now with the Wallabies as well. When I saw that appointment, well, I heard whispers of it in the week, couple of weeks leading up, and I was like, oh, he would be, he fits that. And I guess that's probably coming from what we were just talking about before in terms of the identity and not wanting to stray too far, but, looking to evolve and continue being successful, but also, remembering what the club's about. And he has that strong personality. I think that's required. You look, when I was there, Richard Cockrell had left, and I think he left it. There was a big hole there that we were really struggling to fulfill, someone like Cockers in terms of, keeping standards, hard graft, pushing the boys, all that kind of stuff. And I think Dan's just from that ilk, like he's kind of from the same cloth. He drives the boys extremely hard, very physical, super high standards, little bit of a grumpy bum, bit stressed and stuff like that. And I think that comes with the territory. I think he'll suit it quite well.
How much does he focus on? I think several's talked about how he's super technical on points, which I think there's a similarity with Steve Borthwick. But how does he focus on the culture as well and the standards? Because that was the other big thing that probably, like you just alluded, possibly slipped when Cocker's left as well. Was it sort of, I suppose, like maintaining those standards and keeping that culture? How does he focus on that? And is he still approachable to the boys, or is he very much ruling with an iron fist?
Yeah, no, he's definitely still approachable. He's not going to be the closest of mates, and I don't think coaches should be, to be honest. After I've probably had a lot of different coaches over my time, and I think the ones who keep their distance, because ultimately they've got to drop guys every week. They've got to pick teams. They've got to you've got to push guys to be better, and that's not necessarily a popular position a lot of the time. So Brumbies has got a very good culture and has for a long time. It's for those who don't know the kind of history, it's very much the rejects from Queensland and New South Wales went down to the Brumbies. So everyone went there with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, wanting to prove people wrong, consistently get less funding, less media time, all this kind of stuff. And so the club's really had to build itself up from that, from having less and finding a way to do more, being more inventive than that. So, and you can't do that without a good culture. You can't do that without, any of that kind of stuff. And I always found going from Brumbies to Tigers, there were just huge similarities. Like they're very much focused on, on the club first, before individuals. And, maybe to our detriment at times, at Brumbies, we often reached finals or we didn't necessarily, we didn't win at that point, probably because we didn't cater for Mavericks and have a bit of gloss on the top and a bit of icing on the cake. But we always had that. We were always built from the right stuff. We always had, strong set of piece and hard grafters, good workers. And I think that's what probably why people respected us a bit.
What do you think fans can expect from Dan McKellar's side in terms of like playing style, or is that something that he's always evolving?
Yeah, look, I think, Dan was a defence coach and a forwards coach when I was there. So that probably tells you where his strengths lie. He knows what a good attack looks like as well. He's worked with some exceptional guys, and I'm certain he'll get in some people who are, good thinkers like that. But I think, one thing with Dan, it was any team you coach, you play against, they're going to be a tough, hard team. You're going to have to earn them in. They're going to be very strong at breakdown, very good set piece. He's an Aussie coach. He likes to attack. He likes to do all that stuff. Probably not kick as much as maybe, you say defense and set piece, people think like a big kicking game. I probably wouldn't say that. He's not huge on that. But, I do think it fits the mold a fair bit in terms of the Tigers' DNA.
Is there sort of areas you think he's pushing to develop, like you say, the attack? Is that something that you think he will be looking to layer on?
Yeah. Look, I think he'll do what he like. You know, I'm sure he'll know, or he would have identified the areas that he wants to improve in that. But at the same time, he needs to bring his strengths to it. And as I said before, you don't want to throw the baby out of the bathwater. Like ultimately, the club won a premiership, won a league last year, so they're doing a lot right, more than they're doing incorrectly. So
well, you know, Tigers fans, if we score like 3 tries a season and win the league, and that all those tries are pushovers, they'll be happy.
Yeah, well, he's the Brumbies have, like, Southern Hemisphere have one of, if not the best, rolling maul in the game. And that kind of came from, well, through Jake White and then down into with Dan, and Dan's, you know, he's kept it and he's worked out some pretty cool inventive plays with hookers, loop it, dummy mauling, loop it around and, you know, over on the back, on the inside, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, all kind of, built from a really strong set piece, and then he adds little trick plays on the top of that, which is always good fun for the fans. So ultimately, though, maybe he brings a winning culture, and he expects the team to win and be hard. And I think, as you said, Tigers fans will enjoy that.
Yeah, also a fresh chance for me, I suppose, in case he's on the lookout for an overweight and overage inside centre.
Butch James, 10.
Yeah, scratch ball 10, exactly. It's underrated, though. They won't expect it. Just before we let you go, because thanks so much for sparing some of your evening. What's the future got for you, I suppose, as well? Because I know you're in Japan. Are you still potentially like keeping in touch with the Wallabies, or has Eddie Jones called you and said, "Mate, what are you up to?
How you doing, mate?
How you going, mate?" Has he said any of that yet?
No, he hasn't. No, I'm done international. The game's a bit physical and quick for me, I think, at the moment. But I'm really enjoying my time here. I think I've still got some good rugby days ahead of me, to be fair. But yeah, I want to stay involved in the game afterwards. I'd love to get involved in like a rugby admin type role when I'm done. So I'm just trying to find some, you know, a few ways of learning and whatnot, doing that. And obviously, a guy who I've kept in touch with a lot is Pat Howard, who did it really well at Tigers. So yeah, man, I'm obsessed by the game. So figure I made a living out of it, and I'll try and keep doing it and try and make the game successful enough to kind of, you know, continue on and let other young fellas have a crack at it, because it's been, you know, a pretty special gift for myself. So I'd love to give back in some way.
Well, if it's rugby admin you're interested in, then you're in the right place in terms of the paperwork, I guess.
The what, sorry?
You're in the right place for the paperwork, I guess, on the rugby admin.
Yeah, you know, over here, you get given like this personalised stamp, because you don't even sign things here. So you gotta lodge this thing that takes about 4 weeks, and I have a personalized stamp that says Totomoa Tomoa on it. Like, it's just, mate, it's just weird. Yeah, like, things are so weird here. But it is cool to have my own personalized stamp.
Yeah, I want one now. Mate, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's really great to see you, and I'm sure Tigers fans will love to hear from you as well.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for coming. And, yeah, thanks, everyone. Hope everyone's all good. And always available if you need to spin some yarns.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Let's move on then to I don't know, gritty seems to be understated, really. A gritty, bruising, murderous away win against London Irish, 25-22, the final score. That is a critical win for the playoff push, of course, Elliot. But just how important is that win now to building momentum at a key part of the season?
Yeah, massively. Because in my mind, we are now hitting the running. You know, 5 games left, 75% of the season, that's now gone. We are into the final quarter. You know, the starting pistol, that hear that noise, it's the starting bell of the running. And to me now, this is where it gets really, really interesting. And so the last 2 weeks have given us an opportunity to get, you know, to do something in the top 4 ambitions, because I'm not saying we can do it. I'm not saying we will get there or won't get there. But every year, one team comes from far back, flying into the playoffs, coming in hot, and does a bit of damage when they go in there. we have given ourselves an opportunity to be that team. And that's the great thing over the last 2 weeks is five games left, four at home, one away, two or three games against other playoff rivals. We now have an opportunity. And what was so pleasing about Saturday is just how many of the big moments in the game they were winning. I mean, the first 15, 20 minutes, I know we got a try in it, but we were pretty shonky and it wasn't great and we're a bit ragged at times. I thought as the game went on, I thought we became the better side. We worked our way in. You know, we controlled the game a lot better, won the big moments and just managed the game really well. And I thought that was what was so impressive in terms of just game management stuff. And in these crucial moments where you've got these crucial big games, I think that's a really important ability to have. And both of us have got different things which we took out of the game. I know you want to talk about defence. I've got a few other bits. But I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was a great result for us. And as I say, like you've just said, it sets us up perfectly for what we want to do next.
I think it puts a really positive spin on the running because I think if we'd have lost that, I don't think we'd have been out of the playoff picture, but then there would be no more margin for error at all. And that means the pressure on going away to Gloucester, our last remaining away game. Of course, Gloucester right in the mix. I think their level on points with us are only 1 point above us or something like that. Let's have a quick check at the table. Yeah, they're 1 point ahead of us and they're currently in fourth spot. So that's going to be a huge game, you know, a proper 8 point swing. But it's a game that we can win. But even though it is against Gloucester, it's a game that we don't necessarily need to win because I think that we've got the other four games at home to fall back on. I think if we lost against Irish, then it would become certainly a must-win game. I think that four out of the last five, given that other teams will be taking points off each other as well, should be enough to see us home. But I would rather not leave it up to the gods of fate. And therefore, obviously, winning the last five is something that is well within our gift to do. I think those are all teams that we can beat. Some very, very good teams that we've got to play. Obviously, Quinns and Exeter at home in particular stand out and Gloucester away. But it's all going to start with Bath next week, this weekend, I should say. And we'll come to that very shortly. Turning to the London Irish game, as you say, it was a strange opening period where, you know, often we seem to be on the back foot quite quickly in games. And on this one, we very much motored into it and we got into our stride quite quickly. We were playing quite fast, really good ruck speed. I thought we were playing one out or tip on runners, guys coming around the corner really hard, really aggressively. And Ollie Cracknell returns to his old stomping ground to score a try. Now, you know, that try was just one bit of the good work he did. He should have had another. We'll come to that shortly as well. But I just want to focus on Ollie Cracknell for a second. What a signing he's been. Very, very different player to Tommy Rafael. Not so much about getting over the ball, but he does like a good turnover, a good jackal every now and again. But his power and his dynamism on the carry, I think, is super, super helpful. He's more of a Marco van Staden replacement, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, definitely. When you talk about Moneyball and how it can benefit the squad, I think Cracknell is almost a poster boy for, and I think without being disrespectful, it's probably the only time he's going to be a poster boy for many things. But you look at what Moneyball is all about and why you use it. Ollie Cracknell is the embodiment of that system. You know, we were signed because his carrying stats and his physicality and those bits and pieces of the data were what stood out to Steve, wanted him as part of the group and brought him in. And he's delivering. You know, you look at what Ollie's doing. Yeah, fair enough, he's not first choice. But in terms of pound for pound, what he's delivering, you know, his output versus his salary, it's absolutely staggering. And it, you know, again, that's my point. That's why you use a data approach to your recruitments, why you use a Moneyball system, because you get more output it's more bang for your buck. And, you know, Crackers is delivering that and absolute spades as well.
We then, I think you alluded to, went a little bit soft in that first quarter, I think, particularly around sort of our edges. London Irish managed to find some good space. Generally, if they were attacking us in the middle of the park, we looked pretty good. There were some massive shots going in. George Martin, Jasper Visa, Cam Henderson throwing themselves around. Tom West as well likes a good little knock every now and again, doesn't he? Hell of a handy signing he's proving to be. And
sign Westy. Hashtag sign Westy.
Hashtag sign Westy. Yeah, exactly. Definitely like him to hang around because I think, you know, you look at some of the squad and the depth that we've got there, but I like to think that if you obviously have Cronin, Whitcomb and West, that is a very, very high quality stable of loose heads all of a sudden. And that's quite appealing for next season. If we can hang on to him, that'd be fantastic. Joe Hayes, I thought, actually, just very quickly, I thought had one of his best games of the season for Tigers. Like, he was immense. He was so destructive. He was on top in the scrum as well. But he seems to have upped his physicality as well, I think, in defence.
I think he's benefiting from Steve sends him back to play with us. You know, absolutely.
He's the main man. Now he doesn't have to worry about job sharing with Colt. It's all on him, and he seems to be thriving in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought last year in the Six Nations, he had a good Six Nations playing for Tigers. I think he's backing up again this year. I mean, it's almost unlucky for the first, you know, the person he's having to go up against is Coley, who's in, like, you know, Indian summer having the prime form of his life. But Hayes on his own right, he's playing out of his skin. And to be fair, as you say, it's two good performances in a row.
Yeah, I said that positive in the context of actually us looking a bit softer in the wider channels. And I think that perhaps some of the defence out wide in the middle of the park, which was so good against Saracens, was a little bit ropey for the first quarter anyway against the Norwich. It definitely tightened up. I think we had potentially a couple of defensive misreads. I think Chris Ashton with one. I think Lenny had a couple. Lenny almost had the Saracens game in reverse, I felt. He was quite iffy in the first half and then sublime in the second half. And obviously they went through two very well-taken tries, Tom Pearson and Joe Powell as well. What were your thoughts at that time? Were you thinking, oh God, it's the usual one step forward, two steps back again? Or did you have confidence in the boys to pull it back together?
It's one of those where Irish are such attacking team and have such attacking threats. You almost sort of go, they are going to come at us. They come at us hard. And to be fair, you sort of expect that to happen. What I felt was, I thought we would deal with it better in the first 20 minutes. But what was remarkable, and what was good to see actually, is that I thought we adapted pretty quickly. You know, which, like you've just said, the first 20 minutes we got that out of the system, we started reading it a lot more. And then as the game, especially as that first half progressed, you could see the boys just doing all the little things that you'd want to see them. They grew into the game. They started to impose themselves onto Irish, onto the opposition. And before you knew it, you felt comfortable with where Tigers were going. They started tidying up their bits and pieces. So, you know, I thought it was really good just adapting on the spot of going, first 20 minutes, yeah, they're really testing us and we need to buck our ideas up. But they did so and they fixed it pretty quickly amongst themselves. And I think that's really good to see because, again, you take it into the rest of the season, that ability to fix problems is really important, especially in big games.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was obviously something that hadn't gone to plan, I think, in the first quarter. And it was really good to see the leadership. Again, obviously, the big talking point was Hanro not being captain, despite Richard Wigglesworth probably not able to use the same excuse he used last week, which was that Hanro wasn't fit at the start of the week. So it was just a continuity thing, keeping Julian as captain. You still look at Hanro when he's talking to the players. He's still one of the main guys who chats to the players in the huddle, before the game, during the game and everything like that. Do you think that the role of captain has always been selected for the relationship with the referee, perhaps, and potentially even for the decisions as to whether to go for the points in terms of the actual motivating of players? Perhaps that's still very much in Hanro's remit.
No, look, I think it comes to a wider point of what's happened since the Saints game. I think there's been a few things which have changed, and we'll touch on some a couple of those later on as well. But the main one, you know, one of the main ones has been around this captaincy thing. And to me, you know, I don't buy the club's explanation. I just don't buy it.
No.
Second week in a row.
I think he may well have been 50-50 as whether he was going to play, but I think there is definitely something more behind it.
Yeah, look, Hanro ain't captain anymore. Like, you can dress it up as much as you want and the club haven't announced anything, and that's fair enough, that's up to them. But he ain't captain. And you can tell quite clearly, because in the great videos that Tigers do, if he was captain, and Hanro would be speaking, you've already identified it, Hanro is a senior player and he's part of a senior leadership group. He will be talking during the week, leading training sessions, in the game, after the game. You know, we saw at Saras, he was leading the huddle. He had the first go at it. Montoya took the second one. Hanro is a big personality for us. He's a big player. And him, Lenny, Pollard, they're all going to be talking and reminding the squad about what's the importance of different things and keeping people on track. But in all the videos, if he was captain, they'd have clipped that up and put Hanro on to show that he was still doing his bit. If not, they've clipped it up and they've shown Montoya. You've seen Montoya in the week during the training videos, on the training ground talking. You've seen him after the game. It's Montoya that's talking. I ain't being funny. I'm not buying the club thing. Hanrahan ain't captain anymore. Montoya is. And I think it suits all parties. You know, you look at the last 2 weeks. I thought Hanrahan has played really, really well, unburdened by having to talk to the referee. He's getting on with the game. He's doing his leadership stuff. Exactly what he was doing last year. It is all that we're doing is reflecting. It comes back to getting the best out of the players that you've got available. And last year, it is not a bad thing to be Goose and not be Maverick. You know, that is the reality of it. Some people are better suited to being that, you know, vice captaincy, keeping the standards, keeping the boys on track and having the captain doing the leadership thing, sorting the tactics, talking to the referee and deciding whether to go for 3 points or to the corner. And then Montoya, I think, is better suited to it. It's got the best out of Montoya as a player. It's got the best out of Montoya as a captain. And I think we're seeing the best of Hanro coming back into it. And if it gets to, we get to see the best of Hanro as a player into this running, that's mega for us. It's how important it's been. Get him, you know, crack on, let's get on with it.
Could not say it better, mate. Really well said. Exactly everything I was going to say about it. I think that the only thing I would add is that it certainly wouldn't make me as a fan feel any less about Hanro if effectively he'd handed the captaincy back in, or there'd been a mutual agreement to pass the captaincy to the Emperor. Because I would look at that and say, that is an incredibly mature club-first decision that a great player, a great leader has made. And he is still a massive leader within the club. And he is still club captain. Let's not forget that. He is club captain still. That has not changed. But in terms of first-team captain on the day, that definitely, I agree with you, that has very much changed. And it is Julian. And therefore, I think that, does the club need to announce anything? No. Are they doing it out of potential fear on repercussions on what people will take from it? Possibly yes. Do I think that's justified? No, I think that most fans are mature enough to understand that this would be a very mature thing for him to do. Anyway, but either way, I think that Hanro is instrumental, along with Julian, towards turning that around. In the first half, I thought we slowly started to reel them in. Obviously, we had the yellow card of Harry Potter, which was, I know you kind of look at it and say, what have you stuck your hand out for? But it's, I think it's just one of those automatic things. And actually, I thought he came back, and after, you know, pretty average couple of weeks, I think that he came back and had a really good game. I thought he was probably our strongest runner in the wider channels. I thought he was looking wriggly, is how I describe him. Like, really awkward and difficult to take down, and his really good leg driving contact again. So I was pleased to see him get a bit of form back. And we do get a try through Visa. We say Hanro was the chairman of the 8 out of 10 club. Jasper's almost setting up a 9 out of 10 club now, and it's a one-man band.
It is ridiculous. I think, again, he's got the most carries of the weekend. I'll have to double-check the stats, but I'm pretty sure it's the email that came through is in the stat pack. He's leading the carrying charges. It's brilliant. And if you look at the stuff that Jasper does in his carrying now, is he rides the first tackle and it allows him to get through into the second and the third exchanges. And it takes him, you know, it's an average carry for him now is 4 or 5 yards. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, but when you talk about getting over the gain line, that is absolutely massive. Or if you're on, like, for his try, if you're in close quarters on the try line, that's a try. That's the difference between being stopped or held up and getting over and scoring. And it's those, again, it's that little detail and his ability to distance himself away from being a good player to being a really good player, a great player, is that tiny bit of difference. And he's mega, and he makes it so, he's so important to us. You almost want to go, don't train in the week. You know, just don't train. Find a fucking ice bar.
You try and stop him. You try and wrap him in cotton wool.
I know. This is the problem, is because you can't. It is becoming more and more important in terms of each game now is so important to us. You've just got to try and keep him going, because he's absolutely mega, and it is why you have such special players like that, because they are the point of difference.
My player of the season so far for Tigers, Jasper.
Yeah, I think that's up there.
We'll get to that in a minute, because we had a very good email in as well from James Watts, just saying, what is everyone's thoughts at the moment for player of the season? I think it's too early for that, but I'll play it anyway in a minute. Anyway, we had 2 tries disallowed in that first half. And they said it was Dean Richards in the TMO track, but it wasn't. It was our old friend Bert from Sesame Street, I mean Tom Foley, who was sat in the truck sipping his tea and disallowing Tigers tries. First one, I think it was the first one, was it Ollie Cracknell?
Scotty dropped it in the midfield.
Yeah, so the first one was the Mike Brown disallowed one, where they said Scotty dropped it. And the second one was Crackers with the double movement. Now, I haven't had a proper opportunity to review the Mike Brown one, so let's focus on the Crackers one first. He said double movement because he uses his legs to propel. Now, his knees are down. You can't crawl and do another shift. He at no point moves his legs to do a second movement. Effectively, what he does is a reach, which is just using his body to extend forward and extend his arm to the full extent of the body. He reaches and he scores. I think that's just a plain wrong decision.
Well, it's just a bollocks call. And it's a bollocks call from a bollocks referee who... Yeah, I really don't like bagging referees. I really don't want to do it. But too many of them make it far too easy for me to do it. Foley is an absolute prime example of just someone who... it's a try. And I forget, right, Ty, I know we've got a Tigers hat on all this fit, but it's a try. And... it's what frustrates me about the refereeing. And as I've always said, 99% of decisions I'm not interested in. When it comes to the big calls, we do not get it right consistently enough in this in this game. And it could have a massive impact. You know, these decisions, some of these games now, you talk about it, we've had so many close games.
That could have been a bonus point if we don't get the playoffs by 1 point.
Yeah, or it's a defeat. Yeah. You know, we talk about fine margins. We have so many 1 point victories, 1 point defeats. These are the fine margins we're all working on, you know. You just got to get it right. You just got to get it right, and he didn't.
And just on that, actually, Tom Parton, who was doing the co-coms on the BT Sport app, because obviously it wasn't on telly, he's a London Irish player, fullback, very, very good player, unfortunately injured at the moment, or fortunately as far as we're concerned. But he was doing the co-commentary on it, and he said, "Oof, I think that's a try." And then when he disallowed it, he said, "Look, as a London Irish fan, I'm pleased with that decision. If I'm a Leicester fan, I'd be spewing." Just a quick note on Tom Parsons, because I thought he deserved a lot of credit. I thought usually when you have an ex-player or current player on as co-coms on the BT Sport app, often when it's Max Lahiv, who I find funny unless he's commenting on a Bristol-Leicester game and he's unbearable, you kind of roll your eyes and this is going to be a load of biased claptrap. I thought Tom Parsons was brilliant. Brilliant insight, real good technical knowledge, very articulate. I think he's got a career as a pundit straight after he decides to hang up his boots. He was brilliant.
Or as a coach or analyst, because, you know, an intelligent rugby player and an intelligent pundit, you know, he, like you've just said, I felt, you know, you come away with it going, oh, I've learned something from what he was saying. Or you go, oh, I haven't noticed that. You know, that's what the whole point of what he's there for. And like you said, he was fair for both sides. You know, it was very rare that he ever slipped into London Irish mode. Or if he did, he always caveated by saying, as an Irish player, fair enough, I'm quite happy
exactly
about that.
Exactly, and that's absolutely acceptable and fine. But just an example of, you know, some of his naughtiness, which was really cool. When Jasper scored his try, he said, you know, this is basically just a slightly modified version of the tap move that they did in the final. And it was great to see him pick that up and point it out, which, you know, you wouldn't expect all players to do, but it's like he's done his homework, he knows his stuff. Fair play, Tom, if ever this comes across your airwaves. I thought you were fantastic. Talk to me about the Mike Brown disallowed try. What did you think of that?
It's one of those where, was it forward? It's a 50-50 call. In the modern game now...
Clear and obvious, he's given the try.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 call, whether it's forward or not. The reality is that in the game now, if you drop the ball, irrespective of whether it does go forward or not, they're calling it now as knock-ons. You know, if you drop it in that scenario, they usually say knock-on. And it's usually... you know, I will caveat it a little bit, but, you know, usually they're fairly consistent on this sort of stuff and how they officiate it during the games. So I was less annoyed by it than the Ollie Cracknell one. I think the Cracknell one is a clear and obvious error, and I think it's a bad error at that. The Mike Brown try, I think it probably is a try, but I can understand the reasons why it was disallowed again because of how the referees apply that. And it's all referees at pretty much every game now, so I'm not too angry about that one.
No. One thing that I thought we didn't look particularly good at, and this was throughout, I'd say, most of the game, I thought we looked really good when we had our heavy runners sort of strategically dotted about, particularly in the midfield, in the wider channels. I really like it when we've got, you know, like George Martin, or particularly when Ollie Chesham is back, but you've got Chesham or Hanro lurking in those wider channels next to your wingers. I think it just offers so much at Honeypot's defenders, and when they do get the ball, they generally make some pretty big yards. And also, if a winger does take it in, you've got a guy who's going to be really good at clearing out and protecting the ball. So I really like it when we play it that way. A few too many times it felt like we potentially lost our structure, it felt, against London Irish, and we pushed it wide without any of our forwards, and we don't look particularly threatening when we do that, unless there's a massive overlap. That said, I thought in the second half, when we did get that guy forward and we did go and utilise our carriers, I thought we looked really sharp. And Lenny, I thought, really came to the fore again. I thought he had a difficult first half, made a few errors, but then his kicking tightened up, and also his handling. Absolutely lovely pass for Harry Potter's try. Whipped across, misses the first receiver to Matt Scott. Nice giving pass to Harry, and Harry gets in for a well-earned try. I think it just goes to show that there are definitely steps that are being taken to progress us in attack, but it still occasionally feels quite clunky, doesn't it? And a little bit lateral.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that, again, we spoke after the Saints game, and we said Wiggy needs to go away for the next 3 weeks and decide what he wants to be. Is it going to be the Steve Borthwick copy and paste job and the Steve Borthwick tribute act, or is it going to be and even, you know, Wiggy's own stamp on it? And I think he's gone away, and actually he's chosen the second one. He's chosen to put his own stamp on an existing game plan, and it's slightly different and it's slightly more subtle, but he's sticking with it. And I think he's made a call on what he wants to be. And for the first time all season, I think we're playing with a bit of clarity. And I think we're playing with clarity. There's less confusion. There's a very clear game plan that the boys are sticking to and working on, and they have a very set idea of how they want to go and play the game of rugby. And I think too often this season, we've been guilty, and this goes back to even under Steve, when Steve was here, too often we've tried to replicate what we did last year, and then we've tried to move it into new stuff, and we've all got a bit confused because we don't know if we should be doing last year's stuff, this year's stuff, and it's mismatched, it's not come across very clear. And the irony, because that's Steve's big thing, is clarity. Wiggy now looks as though he's chosen what he wants to do, he's imparted a very clear image and very clear message into the group of this is what we're going to do, and this is how it's going to look like, and this is how we're going to play. And we look a lot better for it, because it seems as though everyone has bought into it massively. And I think we are a bit clunky in attack, but I still think that will come. I think Wiggy's thing is to try and, he used to have a bit more ambition with it. He's shown that, you know, he's said in his interviews that he wants to have the backs doing a bit more than maybe what Steve was allowing them to do. So as a result, that does take a little bit of time. And the irony is, you probably want to put full pre-season under Wiggy to fully flesh that out, because it could be quite interesting to see where it went. And obviously, that's not going to happen, but it's a great question to see what to ponder if you're ever bored.
The parallel universe.
Yeah, it is. But no, I think the attack at times has been really, really good. And at times, it's still a bit clunky, like you said, but it's a bit, it's better than what we're doing. And overall, I'm happy with what we're trying to do over the 80 minutes. Certainly, I'm happier with this stuff compared to the 80 minutes against Saints, where it was so confused. I'm not quite sure what they were trying to achieve out of it.
Yeah, that's it. You can see what they're trying to do at the moment. And obviously, they achieved it very, very well against Saracens for about 30 minutes. And they achieved it, I thought, in bit sort of dribs and drabs against London Irish, and it looked really good.
Yeah.
We then concede a try. Chandler Cunningham himself, by the way, hell of a player. He's only, what was he, 19?
19 stone. Boy. Yeah,
what an absolute unit. He came on, and he looks, obviously, because I think from the back he's got, you know, the big hair going on. You're like, oh, who's this big Islander boy who's come on like that? He's like, no, he's just someone out of the English school system. He's only 19. He needs to fill out a little bit still. And you're like, Jesus, absolutely huge. I mean, like, he was, sometimes when you get these young guys coming up, it looks like they can't handle the physicality straight away, or it's a little bit of a shock, takes a little bit of a while for them to adjust. It looked to me like he was thirsty for contact at every opportunity. He still made mistakes. I think George Martin sort of threw him off with a lovely little line off Lenny, left a nice big gap. So he's still got the refining bits to do. But I mean, for his try, we'll talk about that now. Two cock-ups from two guys who I wouldn't expect to make it. Mike Brown with an let's be honest, a little bit of a howler. He was pretty solid again apart from this, but it's going way over his head. He could probably just leave it or at least let it bounce, but potentially it's going to kick on and be a scrub back to us instead. He sort of gets a finger on it and then manages somehow to slide over both the try line and the dead ball line with the ball, which is kind of an impressive feat. And from the scrum, Chandler Cunningham himself goes and I don't know, it's a strange one. He doesn't go through Liebenberg as opposed to sort of Liebenberg just misses him entirely. He almost sort of aims for where he isn't going to be, and anyway, goes through him and scores a try. But I'm not too worried about that. That was just two sort of almost individual mistakes, and you can kind of chalk that off rather than like a systemic worry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not a system error. The Mike Brown one could not have been summed up anymore. All it needed really was like a custard pie being lobbed into Mike Brown's face. You've got it. It was a little bit like, oh God, he couldn't get it.
So out of character for him.
I know. Well. And you could see in his brain just go, oh no. As soon as he dropped it, you could almost go, I know where this ends and it's not good. Let me say, system errors are a worry. The system held up, and you want to talk about defense, and we will do so, but system errors are a worry. Individual errors, that's just, come on, boys, do it. I can't wait for Cunningham South to sign for us in about 4 years' time when Jasper goes to France. So we might as well call it now. In 2027, Cunningham South's coming to Leicester.
Oh, you're calling it now. If that lands, that's going to be your best bit of foresight on this podcast ever. Well done. But look, to be fair, he does seem like quite a Leicester-y kind of player. Anyway, look, I think we've pinched enough of London Irish's talented youngsters for the meantime. But, I agree on that because I think that first you need to say Hanro and Mike don't make those mistakes at all. And they are human. They're entitled to make them. And by goodness, they really made up for it elsewhere for the rest of the game anyway. So, sorry, that's just basically us laughing at something that we're not good enough to get on the pitch and do, but we're going to laugh at it anyway. I'm going to talk about the defence, as you rightly point out. Again, we had a bit of goal line defence. It wasn't as constant as it was against Saracens, but it was pretty impressive still. London Irish, as you point out, will score tries and they will rip teams up. What was super impressive to me was, I don't think they really made, I can't really think of that many, maybe a couple of line breaks after the first quarter. I thought we shut them down in the midfield. I thought we shut them down in the centre of the park. They couldn't get wide. Our scramble across was superb. And then when they did get down on our line, aside from the mistake that we just talked about, the goal line defence, once again, was absolutely magnificent. Absolutely huge. The likes of Montoya over the ball seems to keep delivering huge turnovers. And when Rafael is back, then you've got double trouble in that department, which is fantastic. But every single person in that pack, I don't really want to just pick out one person, was absolutely enormous. And in the backs as well, you have the gang tackles. What I like is the way that the team smells blood. If somebody stops another player behind the gain line, a London Irish player got caught behind the gain line, and they start trying to fight, wriggle, they don't have a chance because the rest of the pack has come swarming in. By pack, I mean, I hate to say it like that, wolf pack mentality, go swarming in and basically start to drive the guy back and absolutely murder them. It was absolutely wicked to watch. Front and centre, I'm not going to pick people out, but I will. George Martin, player of the match. Gorgeous George. Fucking hell. That guy likes, I don't know what you want to call him, the lumberjack, because he just chops people.
I mean, we are at close to the point now where George has gone from being undroppable from your gun 23 to probably being now undroppable from the 15. I think You've almost got to find a way, even if it means like playing him on the wing or something. You've just got to get, I mean, what a terrifying prospect that is. You know, we've just lost Nemani, fucking stick George on the wing, terrifying. Yeah. You have probably got to get him into to that sort of lineup. And I would say, just a shout out to build on to your point, shout out to Matty Everard. You know, Dan McKellar is now going to be paying attention to this sort of stuff. 2 weeks in a row, he will be looking at that defence and going, that's pretty decent stuff. And I think you're right. I think it's great. And building off what you've just said, I think it's clear to me that the team now and the squad have gone into knockout rugby mode in terms of it's do or die. You've mentioned that maybe we can afford to drop a win. I think the squad have got themselves into an attitude now and a way of being of, we cannot afford to drop a single game. I think they're operating on there is no tomorrow. You know, as they say in Lions speeches, when it gets to a test match decider, there is tomorrow, one with a shirt, one without. there is, you know, all that sort of stuff going on. You can take that on, but they are very much in that sort of, we cannot afford to drop a single game now. And that makes us quite dangerous opponents, because actually if you get into that mindset and of we have to win a game, it makes you really, really dangerous, because you find a way to win because you have to. You know, when we went to Toman Park in 2007, that was only because we'd lost to Munster in the first game of that pool. And Pat Howard said, if we want to qualify, we've got to win all our games.
Yeah.
And we won all our games because we had to win all our games. You know, it's that ruthless of, we have to win, and so we will win. If you can get it right, it can take you so, so far. It is absolutely amazing. And your point about the goal line defence is the embodiment of that, because that's mindset. You can't really coach. To a certain extent, you can coach.
Yeah, but you're not worried about the system, your systems particularly, and you're not really worried about a pendulum, you know, back three swinging across, or actually, you know, do you drop the winger? You know, are we going to do a press or not? Because you can't afford to do a soft press and just let them run at you. So it has to literally just be, as I said on a previous podcast, my favourite bit of the game is actually goal line defence now, because you don't have to think about the strategy. It's literally getting up and hitting people. And when the chips are down, you know, boy, do the boys stand up. It was like having a team of Gandalfs out there in terms of, you know, you shall not pass. It was absolutely awesome to watch.
Yeah, bang on, because it's a mindset thing. It's a mindset. You either want to tackle them or you don't, because there is no systems to it. You know, Sam Warburton said it in the Wales-England game with Sinclair, and he said it's an alpha test. You know, Sinclair got over because he wanted it more than the opposition. What we were doing is stopping Lyrish, and then we stopped Saris, because we have got such a ferocious, like, almost desperation of, our season's on the line, we cannot afford to drop a game. And we are going to the absolute wells of, like, whatever it is to stop people. And it makes us so, so dangerous, because if you can have that defence in every game that we go into, bloody hell, you know, that's pretty special stuff.
Absolutely. Just on Martin as well, lovely break as well in the second half. Off, and that was lovely by Lenny as well. Nice little snipe. And you can see Martin just lurking behind him. Really nice communication by those two. And good to see George on the gallop as well.
Yeah,
it's just interesting, isn't it? You and I had this discussion before. Do you shoehorn in George Martin in the second row? And, you know, it's getting to a point where I think he's putting Hanro under pressure for his spot for six. That's no slight on Hanro. That's just how well George is playing. But if, yeah, all things considered, do you force George into second row? And when we had Nick Dolly on last week, he said, hey, he's probably the best scrummaging lock actually in the club in terms of the power that he generates in the row. So that is really interesting to hear. So just, you know, something to keep an eye on. And you stole my point on Matt Everard, by the way. Yeah, the coaches are very much on audition as well. And, you know, potentially Matt Everard sitting in under a guy who already knows his defence, that could be a very, very handy person to stick around. So I think, well done, Matt. I think you're doing a fantastic job. Now, as I say, just quickly before he's gone, three-word reviews, James Watt wants to let us all know where he's at the moment, thinking his end-of-season awards are going to be. I think it's too early for this, James.
Morning, gents. Hope you guys are well and enjoyed the victory on Saturday night. Great weekend overall with the results, I thought, but wanted to get your thoughts on whether or not we're going to make top four. I think yes. What your thoughts are on our signing of the season? I think it's Ollie Cracknell. Who do you think our player of the season is so far? I think it's Dan Cole. And young player, I think it's George Martin. Eager to know your thoughts. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers, James. If we can answer that quickly. Top four, yes.
Yep.
Signing, at the moment, Cracknell.
Crackers or Cronin? I'll probably go to Crackers.
Crackers. I think there's still time for Andre to sneak in with it, by the way, because I think he still looks really good.
I think there's a clutch penalty. I think there's a clutch penalty in Andre.
There's at least one, if not two, clutch penalties. And, you know, some fantastic goal kicking again. At the weekend, need to give him credit as well, because even when things aren't going quite his way in attack, just something about the structure that he brings, we look so much more, so much better. And again, seeing him in defence as well, that's pretty special. So, yeah, at the moment I'll go Cracknell, but I wonder if I might be singing Pollard's tune later on. Player of the season so far for me, I said it earlier, Jasper.
Yeah, I think that's probably, he's up there. There's quite a few, I think. Chesham, I thought, has done pretty well. I'd probably say, actually, George Martin.
Yeah, that's it. George Martin or Visa for me. the thing is that Chesham and Martin both had injuries for a little while. I suppose Jasper was away from South Africa, wasn't he? So, and he had his injuries as well. Oh, what am I talking about? Anyway, let's go young player then. Yeah, George Martin. Oh, it's ridiculous because so many of our players are still young. Tell you what, Cam Henderson keeps up this run of form in the second half of the season, and I'll be singing his tune with the young player as well.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Kelly only had 5-6 weeks before England, and in those 5-6 weeks, looked absolutely mustard. Mm. So, yeah, Cam Henderson's great. Cam Henderson, I think, you talk about, can we shoehorn George Martin in? I mean, you've got Chesham flying out of his skin with England and doing a bit for us. You've got George Martin, you've got Cam Henderson. I mean, bloody hell, we've got such a nice problem to have. I mean, stone me, who'd be a selector?
No, and you've got Chesham Jr. coming through as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think it's his birthday as we record that. So happy birthday, Lewis. Happy birthday, Stump. Well done. Okay, let's move on to some three-word reviews. What have you got for me, mate?
Yeah, so the first one for me was from Tim Hutchins, who put things are happening. Yeah, I think we're starting to build something quite nicely. As I said, we've not had any momentum all year. It's been a bit of a different season for lots of different reasons. But two wins in a row, two gritty, backs-to-the-wall, heart-and-character wins. Yeah, I think, you know, take it one step at a time, but it's pretty special stuff to do it back-to-back like that. And, you know, you are into the running now. It's a nice time to start peaking.
Absolutely. Yeah, I quite like that. This, you know, things are happening. Yeah, just that little bubble of excitement, you know. Yep. You know, we're not there yet, but something special could happen. And like, just being in the competition still, given everything that we've been through, is pretty good. I'm going to give a shout out to Richard SP69. Very mature, Richard, unless you were born in 1969, in which case it's accurate. His handle is once a tiger, always a tiger. And he says, the final steal. And then he puts in brackets, Van Vake, I think. Yes, we didn't actually mention that. I thought it was legal, but I think we both agreed, no matter what, he's basically positioned himself like he's the London Irish player, and he's basically given a slap on the arse, said, yeah, get the ball back to me, as if he's the London Irish guy who's locked in. And instead, he just gets the ball, goes yoink, and then legs it upfield. Fantastic bit of play from a guy who doesn't always get the love from the fans, but fair play, Francois. That was fucking massive.
Yeah, I mean, two things here. One, top-tier shithousery for A, swimming up the wrong side and not getting caught. Yeah. And then secondly, bum slap, get the ball back. See you later, boys. Off. I think that's fantastic. And also, just a shout-out to Van Vake. That's 2 weeks in a row now. He's come off a bench and has played an absolute sterling effort on goal-line defence and throwing himself in. As last week, he was a big part of getting the ball held up, where he literally got underneath the Saris player and laid on the floor and held them, literally with his big arms, held them. Mm. And this time again, he's on the goal line, he's throwing himself into tackles, he's getting stuck in. And, you know, in terms of that defensive maul effort as well, he's shithousing as well. So, you know, look, he doesn't get sometimes a bit of appreciation. Sometimes it can be a bit fair at the stuff he gets. But, massive for him. I was really pleased for him that he was a big effort for winning us the game, really.
Yeah, and actually, sometimes he's gone to bits in the scrum as well, but actually he's come on with a young scrum, usually with Claire and Hurd on the tight end side, and they've been really solid as well. So I think you have to give a lot of credit to him. You know, if he gets stick when he hasn't played well, you have to give him credit. I think he's had two massive impacts off the bench, so fair play, Francois. Particularly, as you say, getting in the London Irish sort of, I don't know, what would you call it, the quarterback spot at the back of a mall, and then yoinks it and runs off. Fantastic. As you said, I was slightly worried that Lenny was about to kick for territory. But luckily, Pollard grabs the ball off him and boots it out for the win. So fantastic. Yes. Anyway, thanks, Richard. That was a good one.
Yeah, there was two more for me, purely just because they were on a similar sort of theme. Tom Clayton put George Martin Express and James Harrison put George Martin Show. Yeah, George was massive, as we've said, and deservedly was player of the match.
Andrew Salter gets in touch at Salt65. And says, Captain, Emperor, Tormentor. Obviously in reference to the Emperor himself, Julio Montoya. And Elliot, you pointed out, you think that's basically the makings of a flag right there.
Yeah, if you sort of put that onto a flag with Julian's face, I think that'd be pretty mega.
Yeah, away days in Europe, unveil that. You know, this is where you want an away section. A couple of flares going off. Unveil the massive, you know, about 10 metre by 10 metre flag that has Julian's silhouetted face. Yeah, saying Captain Emperor Tormentor. Oh, yeah, I can see it now. Great idea, Andrew. Thank you.
Yeah, like it. No pyro, no party.
Okay, let's move on to the Ultimate Pro Era 15. That's right. This is where we're going to pit the winners of the votes from the homegrown heroes against Elliot's imports. So in case you're getting upset about the people who are being nominated, it's all been voted for by the fans. And that's why the players elected have been the players elected. And that's why we ended up with Neil Back versus Julian Salvi for the number 7 shirt. Elliot, comfortable win. Although, you know, I think a creditable performance for Mr. Salvi.
Yes, there is clearly a stronger contingent of Salvonians out there than I thought.
I love the fact that they're so hardcore that even when it goes up against Neil Back, one of the all-time Leicester legends, they will still vote for Salvi. I just love the idea that there's like a core, like a far right group, but not that they're all Nazis, but basically a really hard-minded core group that are like, Julian Salvi is the best 7 that we've ever had.
And
they will say it with utter sincerity, and they will fight you for it.
Yeah, it is absolutely mad. We've underestimated the Salvonians.
Fair play for the conviction. He's a great player, and fair play for having enough conviction in it to stick with the vote, because I was surprised. Anyway, but yeah, you give the scores.
I thought this was going to be like Jono's, a 99% like war. Like, we almost toyed the idea of, do we not put Jono up for a vote? But we went, democracy's got to decide, even though it was bad form for both Jono and for Leo. And we thought we were in a similar sort of boat with Backy, because Backy is a bona fide club legend. He is up there as one of the best, you know, GOATs, you know, greatest of all time. He ticks all the right boxes. He's done everything there. And like Stuart Keane said, don't think he ever remembered Backy having a bad game. Same with Jono. However, so I thought it was going to be in the 90s. I thought it'd be 95% plus. And instead, it was relatively... I mean, it's a walkover. Backy still gets 87%, but Salvi got 13%. That, to me, is a chunkier, as I say, this is a chunkier caucus of Salvonians out there than I expected. And I'm actually all here for it, because it is actually quite funny.
Yeah, and as I say, I quite admire it. If you genuinely think that a player is quality and you want to stick by him, fair play, stick to your guns, and that's what they've done.
Massive.
But still lost. Neil Back is the best 7 in the club's history, or at least certainly in a professional era. So he is going straight into the Ultimate Pro Era 15. And we are very close to rounding off the pack. And I think I alluded to it last week. This one is an absolutely brutal choice.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I'm really, really intrigued to see how this plays out, because for the homegrown side, we have Martin Corey. For the imports, we have got Jasper Visa. And this is fascinating for so many reasons.
Well, it's almost a trade-off between, I think, who is the better number 8, and I'll be quite blunt, who is the better number 8, and who has had the bigger impact at the club. Martin Corey, club captain, fantastic number 8, England international, England captain as well, of course. He led the club through loads of periods of success. He was everything that you wanted from Leicester Tigers. He embodied it, just like Jono, just like Backy, in terms of being, he was hard, he was tough, massive work rate. Did have an annoying punch shot for the most irritating penalty in the book, which was pulling someone's arm with the line out, which he did at least once a game, and I lost my shit at. But apart from that, he was fantastic. And he was underrated with his skills as well. Fantastic offloader. And against Jasper, and this is maybe where people say a bit of presenteeism is going, I think you've got the most explosive and dynamic number 8 we have ever had at this club. In terms of what I personally want from a number 8, it's Jasper. But then it's so hard to weigh then against Corey's impact at the club. So it depends what your criteria is. It's all very subjective what your criteria is for selecting in this team.
To me, Corey was almost the godfather and the creator of the 8 out of 10 club, just in terms of just relentless consistency of solid performances. You give him something to do in a game and he'll go out and do it, whether it's for England, whether it's for Leicester. You know, as soon as Jono retired, Corey really was the most natural person to take over. It was just seemed right that he was captain, and it fitted perfectly for him to do so. Played six, but he also played eight so well. Great line-out option, and just an all-round top player and consistent with it. But Jasper is so explosive, and he's only been here for 3 years. So it's not like Jasper's got years and years and years of trophies like Corey's got. And he hasn't got 400 games for Tigers that Corey's got. And he has got all the medals and all the performances and all this fit. What he does have is 3 years body of just extreme destruction and just coming in. And from the minute one, from his first carry, 10 seconds into his debut.
Gloucester, wasn't it?
Yeah, into his debut. He absolutely smokes Gloucester. Takes half a pack with him, and everyone went, "Oh boy, we've got to play." And then he
right, and he didn't look fit because he'd been locked up in quarantine, hadn't he? Because it was obviously COVID. What I like about Jasper is the fact that his own development almost mirrors the club's development. He came along when we were in the doldrums. We put him in, and he was explosive. He was raw, but he was there when we were at our lowest ebb, and he helped build us back up to the team that we are now. And about halfway through the title winning season, where he'd had an okay start, but had also, I think, had a couple of cards which could have been costly, he then revisited his discipline. He tidied it up almost overnight to a point where he has been one of our most consistent and still destructive players. I think he is, for me, the best out and out number eight I've seen live playing for Tigers. At a consistent level. Every now and again, Henry Tuilagi would do something that was kind of unearthly. But in terms of consistency of delivery, but then Jasper is the best, but then I weigh it against Corey and his longevity, and it's really difficult to choose. Where are you going with it, mate?
I think I'll flip-flop on this one. I probably lean towards Corey, purely because 400 games worth of consistency and all the trophies is hard to argue against. But at the same point, Jasper is world-class. To me, Jasper is in the world-class territory, and he is almost so unique in terms of how explosive he is. I almost want that, if that makes sense.
Do you know what's... Actually, I've just thought, do you know what's starting to push it? The back row balance.
Go on, so we've got Crofty at six, Backy at seven.
I just think if you put Jasper at the back of that scrum with those two on the flanks, that's just... Oh, but then I suppose, do you want more out-and-out power? Because you've already got kind of... You've got the Jackler, you've got the Flyer in Crofty. Do you want a grafting number eight?
I mean, if you look at the pack, you've got Ayerza at one, Montoya at two, Coley at three, Jono and Ben Kay in the second row, Crofty at six with Backy at seven. Oh, it depends what you want. If you...
I don't think you need another line-out option. You've already got Crofty in there.
No. It is so close. Yeah. I genuinely cannot call this one. Tomorrow, you could make a very strong case, as we have done, for Jasper. And I wouldn't... I know people go, oh, recency bias. I think Jasper is the exception to the rule where he is so, so good.
Yeah.
The recency thing actually is irrelevant because he is genuinely
It's similar
that
to
good.
Montoya, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think I think Montoya and Jasper are so important to this modern team, you can understand why they've got in over the players they have. Oh, sorry. I'll probably lean towards Corey, but when I get to the vote, I will probably hesitate for a long time over the Jasper button because it is so tempting because he is so uniquely powerful.
I am probably the opposite. But I will hate myself for voting for Jasper because Martin Corey for so long was my favourite player and is such a lovely bloke as well. And he is a Tigers legend. That's going to make me miserable. Hopefully it will make a lot of you miserable as well. And we'll put up a vote later on this week. And I say look forward. We dread reading the results with a good amount of trepidation. Now, time just before we go to look ahead to what is already looking like a pretty crucial home match at Matty Hollywood's Welford Road this Saturday against Bath at 3 o'clock. Bath. Let's talk about Bath, Elliot, because, well, firstly, let's talk about the last game we played against Bath, because I was there and I made a vow afterwards never to go and see us play Bath at the Rec again. I'm clearly a bad luck charm. The last time before I went to see us play, we lost 45-0. And on this occasion, we threw away about four first-half tries to allow Bath to stay in touch. And then, lo and behold, we went into our shell and lost to a last-minute score this time round.
Yeah, of all the games that we've thrown away this year, you know, Exeter away, Bath away, Bristol away, Ospreys at home, I think the Bath one annoys me the most because we were battering them so much in the first half. And really, it would not have been a disgrace if we'd gone in having scored 30 points.
Agree.
To have only scored 13 points.
Harry had that thing where he couldn't catch anything. He dropped two over the line.
Yeah.
And then I think we got held up once as well, didn't we?
It was just a shambles all around, but I think it was possibly he must have had three chances to do something and he didn't do it. That's the game for, I mean, I've always said all year, this is so close, but so far away from getting it right. The Bath game away annoys me immensely because, let's be frank here, Bath in that first half was shite. And we were brilliant in that first 40 minutes and we really should have put 30 points on them and that would have been game done. You know,
we were battering them in the contacts. Like every carry was just taking out two or three players. There was wave after wave of carry and then we just couldn't finish a Sunday dinner. And you have to give credit to some desperate Bath defence on that as well. But it was infuriating. And then in the second half, credit to Bath, they clawed their way back into it. We went into our shell. And I think it was Will Butt, wasn't it, who scored a great finish in the corner.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the second half, we just stopped playing and we didn't do anything. We literally didn't do anything. Mm. And it was painful to watch because you could see what was going to happen. You look at Bath, they've had a bit of a mixed season because they've had a period of time in the season when they were showing a bit of signs of recovery. And then they've gone back into being shite again. You know, that Friday night game against Bristol last week was probably one of the worst adverts of Premiership rugby I think you could ever put out.
Absolute pig of a game, wasn't it?
Two crap teams being crap, you know, on a crap pitch. You know, brilliant. That's your Friday night entertainment, which we all watched. We all watched it.
Say what you really think, mate.
Austin called it worse than I did. I mean, Austin really went for them worse than what I did. And look, Bath have gone back into playing really poor rugby. And it's very rare that I say this, but I think in the context of where we are in our season, we have to get 5 points out of this. Normally, I'd be like, I want to win. Bonus point would be nice. We have to get 5 points out of this. And I respect Bath. They are dangerous. They've got dangerous players. And they'll set up with a 6-2 formation on the bench. And they'll try and, you know, hold on. And they'll try and take it to the last quarter and try and nick something. And fair play to them. But we have got to put them away and we have got to dispatch them because it's good for our season. It's imperative for me that we come away with 5 points here. And we haven't actually put in an 80-minute performance yet all year. We've shown it in fits and starts. We're 20 minutes here, 30 minutes here, 40 minutes here. We haven't put a team away properly and sustained it for 80 minutes. Now would be a really good time for us to turn up and do it.
I completely agree. I think it's a game where we should ideally be aiming for 5 points. But Bath are just one of those sides that make me feel slightly nervous. Now,
yep.
I don't know who they're going to put out, but there is always going to be quality there. I'm just looking down the team that they had out against Bristol. It should not be performing as badly as it's performing. The back row I really like. It's Bayliss, Underhill and Reed. Miles Reed, I think, is a cracking player. Mm-hmm. Underhill, you know how good he can be on his day. He hasn't found that form. Poor bloke's been injured all the time, but you know it'll be our luck if he all of a sudden hits his stride against us. Barno at Loosehead, he's a great player. And, you know, yes, I think that tight five can perhaps be knocked about a little bit. You've got Atwood and Rue, who actually I think Rue might have been injured. But, you know, I think that maybe the tight five is the area where we can try and smash him. But, you know, in the back line, you've still got Ben Spencer at nine, Ajomo, Redpath, Thokina Singer, De Glanville, Gallagher. These are all high quality players. I mean, Piers Francis had an absolute stinker of a day with the boot. Fortunately, I assume Bailey might start fly half instead. But, you know, it's a team which I think fundamentally we have got to focus on beating up and being very, very aggressive with, not dissimilar to how we played at their place in the first half, but with a finishing touch and doing it for 80 minutes.
I think if you were to combine, I do repeat myself and I do apologise, but the Claremont away game, if you take that intensity for 80 minutes and pair it with the defence over the last 2 weeks, we will win this game of rugby. I have no doubt of that, because that intensity that we brought against Claremont, that hard running, that anger, that ferocity, if you bring ferocity to that level and you bring it for 80 minutes, it is very, very hard for many teams. This isn't just Bath, but at our best, it is hard for any team to really live with us. And if you sustain it, you can blow a team away. And combine it with a defence, that should get you enough over the line to get you a win, and a good win as well. But that has to be what we've got to be aiming for. And it's down onto us, on us, to turn up and deliver that performance levels.
Well, Austin did make the good point, and he said they are rubbish in attack. They are rubbish. And so as long as our defence make sure they're switched on, then hopefully we should be able to manage this Bath attack. Discipline, however, is key. We can't give them easy field position, because that is, on the face of it, unless they show up and play how they're capable of playing, that is the only way they're going to get territory, is if we give them territory through our own ill discipline. But we should be able to get on top in territory. We should be able to get on top with our pack. Where they are okay is in defence, where I think you've got Van Graan is trying to make them harder to beat, similar to what Steve did with us. He hasn't quite managed it yet. But they have had some good results, so we know they are capable of it. And they have had some good defensive shifts. And, you know, they didn't concede a whole lot of points against Bristol, so we know that they're not dreadful in the defensive category. But the one thing that is hard to defend is complete and utter forward dominance. And so for that reason, I would go with exactly the same pack. I'd almost be tempted, unless we've got maybe Guy Porter coming back, I'd be very tempted to go with effectively the same lineup once again.
We've got Tommy Raphael come back.
We do, don't we? I'd have Tommy on the bench.
I think it go either way. To be fair, I can see the beauty of it. Cronin is also back in training. My concern would be, we've gone to the well twice in a row. There might be some tired legs to go three times in a row with the same pack. If there is an option of Cronin being fit, I love Westy, but I could understand why Cronin starts. Just a bit of that scrummaging, that power.
I agree.
And I could understand it if Wellesley wanted to start in the second row, just to bring a bit of energy from the start, just to put some fresh legs in there. And with Tommy, again, you can understand why. It's a tough one, because you make some really good points on it. In the back line, I think Porter is the obvious one. And I'm not sure after that if there's many changes I would make. You could maybe make an argument for Harry Simmons if you wanted to have a bit of live wire pace into the back line. But otherwise, I'm not sure there's much to be changed. It comes down to whoever is selected. It comes down to the three things we've always banged on about on this podcast: intensity, work rate, discipline.
Yep.
Accuracy. You know, you've got to nail it.
You've just done the David Brent thing. I'll give you three more, and then just kind of list drop accuracy and at the end, which is four. Excellent. No, but you are right, though, because I think it's a really simple game plan against Bath. I think where our advantage is, it's in the pack, and we have to be pretty brutal in that regard. What is your prediction for it?
But I'll be very nervous unless we go out and take them apart like a steam train, then I'll feel more comfortable. I will probably be a little bit punchy and see Tigers by 12, 13 points. I think if Tigers turn up and play to the absolute what they should do and do it for 80 minutes, you could see Tigers do a bit of damage. But it's on us. We have to. I cannot emphasise it. It's all down to us. We have so much control over this game in terms of how it's going to go. We have to take it in our hands. But because Tigers by 10 or 12.
I'm also going to be punchy. I'm going to be punchy, A, because I like to think that we've got a little bit of a G up from this performance that we've had. I also just wonder whether or not the last two losses for Bath, at home against London Irish, at home against Bristol, you know, they're realistically not going to get into the top eight now either. So they're not going to get into the top tier of Europe. I think that they don't have a huge amount to play for. I wonder how demoralised it might be. You know, we thought things were going to be better they're not. This is what I'd like to think, that effectively there's an opportunity for us to go out and put them to the sword. Yeah, I'll be punchy. I'll say Tigers by 18.
I think, and you make a really good point, because Sarries, we got to 24 points to free up, and we started like a steam train and got 24 points to free up. And because Sarries were a champion side, with a champion mindset, they made it really nervy for us because they fought their way back into it. I would be really interested to test that mindset. And I would suspect that might be a message that Wiggy says, that if you get yourself three or four tries up, the heads could drop pretty, pretty quickly and you could get on top of them really, really hard. And if you get, it's that mentality, if you get on top of a team, we saw it when we were shit, you know, we folded pretty quickly.
Yeah. Bath did it to us a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good point in terms of test that mindset, you know, get a couple of scores up. If there's 3 points on offer, take them, just, you know, keep the scoreboard ticking over and really test that mindset. It'd get 20 minutes in, 30 minutes in, they're 20 points down. What you got, boys?
Like it. Give them hell, boys. Well, that's the end of this week's podcast. Thanks a lot for sticking around, everyone. Sorry if I've been slightly garbled this week, even more so than normal. Like I said, that's what 6 hours of cumulative sleep over the last two nights will do to you. Anyway, go on the boys. If you can get down to Mattielli Woods Welford Road this weekend, please do so. As we all know, the club needs all the support it can get at the moment. It should be a cracking day. No Six Nations to distract you. Go on the boys. We'll be right back.